Hello and welcome to 35 Minute Movies, a Vin Diesel podcast. This is the podcast where we're talking all things Vin Diesel. We're going through his entire filmography and ranking and reviewing every film he's ever been in. I'm Cameron, and as always, I'm joined by Vin Diesel's number one fan, Oase. How are you today?
I'm good. I've got my appropriate t-shirt.
You're representing. That's good to see. Got to get on brand.
I'm excited to talk about these movies. Got some interesting ones. An interesting double bill.
It's a really interesting double bill, but it also signals almost the end. We are two episodes away from the end, and that is just...
That's mad.
It's like, it doesn't quite compute at this point. We started this, what, back in February, and I know we've taken some weeks off. We took a quite a big gap between the first episode and that, but still, like, it is just crazy. And yeah, it's been such a bloody ride.
It's the fact that, I mean, we've actually made it this far through, like, the majority of his career. We've seen some sort of real progression. And it's been exciting. And I think that the next ones are sort of lumped together, I guess you could say. We're sort of mainly now focusing on Fast and Guardians. Or Groot, yeah. More so than Guardians. But it's been interesting.
We're talking Fast and Furious 8, or The Fate of the Furious, depending on which country you live in. Directed by F. Gary Gray, came out in 2017. Oase, what the hell happens in this movie?
Basically, we open in Cuba, and sort of Dom and Letty are there. They're sort of just living life. And then this sort of mysterious woman comes over to Dom and seduces him, and turns out she's a hacker terrorist called Cypher, and basically she has enlisted the help of Dom to retrieve God's Eye and a few other devices to help her take over the world with cyber terrorism. But in doing so, it means that Dom has to take on his team, who are trying to stop him for a reason we don't know until later on. And this is the first film that, yeah, pits him against his crew. And it's a very interesting setup in that regard. I remember when the trailer for this dropped, because no one knew anything about Fast 8. The trailer for this dropped, and in the trailer it's revealed that they're going after Dom. And I remember just seeing that for the first time and just being so shocked at the very concept of that. What did you think of the film?
I remembered it more fondly than I did actually watching it. I don't know what happened for me this time round. It just did not click at all. It didn't feel as fun as the other ones. It did not feel as... It feels messier in terms of just plot in general. I think it really feels contrived. Like, they really wanted to have... They thought, let's have Vin Diesel against the rest of the Fast family and see how that plays out. But they didn't have a reason why, so they just tried to fill in with weird hacker jargon and then almost soap opera level of plot, like, twists. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's been out for 4 years at this... nearly 5 years at this point. Is it 5 years or 4 years? 4 years at this point.
About four, yeah.
Yeah,
four,
so...
almost five, I guess.
It's Dom's son. Is it Dom's son? Yeah, Dom's son.
And
It's so strange. And also, when did they have the time to have the babe? Like, you know?
Yeah, so apparently the opening scene of Fast and Furious 6, when he's with Elena after Fast 5, which to me only seemed like a very brief period of time, but apparently that was the moment they had their kid. It is, I agree with you. And these Fast and Furious films, we've talked about how they're already quite contrived sometimes. That's my biggest issue with this. It takes that to a whole other level of just unnecessary. I get that after the passing of Paul Walker, they wanted to do something a little bit different narratively. And pitting Dom against the crew is probably the next sort of best thing they can do with that. But it feels to me that they rushed that, or they didn't know the best way to do that. And so the plot is just a complete mess.
It really is. It is just to the point where it's just he's eye rolling. It's more Dwayne Johnson going, God's eye, hacker, yeah. hacker terrorist, yeah. all seeing device. We need to get it back, and that's in the wrong hands. Sort of shite that is just continually plaguing Fast and Furious movies at this point. You know what I mean? Like it's always some kind of like tech bomb. I think one of them was just called a tech bomb at some point. It was just like...
I think the Fast Furious 6 was just some sort of... The Nightshade device, I think, was some sort of just tech bomb. I guess. I think.
It just disappointed me. And it's not to say it's not a fun movie. There are a lot of cool set pieces, as there always is.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't knock the fact that there's a bloody submarine and missiles...
The prison fight.
Punted around, yes, the prison fight.
The prison fight is dope.
I love Statham and Johnson together. Yeah. They are such a good 100%. Team. And it's one of the main reasons I kind of prefer. One of my favorite Fast and Furious movies is Hobbs and Shaw. Much to Vin Diesel's chagrin, I'd imagine. we should probably mention the on-set troubles. That plagued this movie.
I think that's probably good, yeah.
Because, they really were nearly at each other's throats. Wasn't it down to the fact that Hobbs and Shaw was coming out? You were the one that read up on this.
Yeah, so a week sort of before filming ended, Dwayne Johnson posted on his Instagram this sort of very infamous post, and he was like, this is my final week of shooting Fast and Furious 8. There's no other franchise that gets my blood boiling more than this one. An incredible, hardworking crew. Universal has been great partners. My female co-stars are amazing. My male co-stars, however, are a different story. Some conduct themselves as stand-up men and true professionals, while others don't. The ones that don't are too chicken shit to do anything about it anyway. Can they, asses? When you watch this movie next April and it seems like I'm not acting in some of the scenes and my blood is legit boiling... You're right. Bottom line is, it'll play great for the movie, and it fits this Hob character that's embedded in my DNA extremely well. The producer in me is happy about that. Final week on Fast 8, and I'll finish strong. Hashtag Iceman cometh. Hashtag zero tolerance for candy asses. Basically, he was pissed off, and it turns out the reason for that, the main person it seems he was calling it was Vin Diesel, whose behavior was just very diva-like on the film. He would turn up, you know, 6 hours late, leave everyone waiting. He cancelled a lot of Hobbs' scenes. There was supposed to be a post-credit scene to Fate of the Furious, which was going to set up Hobbs and Shaw. Vin cut that. I think he was just quite annoyed that Hobbs got a spin-off. And that, I guess, the Fast and Furious was no longer just his thing. But it seems like, you know, they've cleared things up now. It went on for a little while, but it seems like recently they've cleared things up, and hopefully Dwayne Johnson will be back for the 10th one.
It says something about producer Vin, and you can almost see it, like recent producer Vin, you can almost see it in Triple X that we spoke about last week as well. He was a executive producer on that film, and it's very clear that he was. It's all these contracts that you can't be they can't be defeated, they can't be blah, 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 they can't do all that, and they're very protective over themselves and their ego, it seems. And it just it's such a disappointing feud, because they're two actors, like two movie stars, that are just so much fun to watch on the screen, but when that kind of stuff's happening, you sort of think to yourself, like, what's going? You guys are millionaires, like, chill out. Like, someone's made a movie and you're not in it. Just calm down.
Yeah. And the other thing is, it's like the Fast franchise has really been bolstered by the addition of Hobbs. Like, you know, you can't really deny that. And I think it'll be interesting to see what Fast 9 is like without Hobbs. But like, you'd think that for the sake of the franchise, for the sake of making his franchise as good as it can be, they would put any sort of petty differences aside and just make the best movie that they can. And sort of use the best elements of it, which in this instance is Dwayne Johnson. It is Hobbs.
For sure. And you said it was bolstered by Dwayne. You have to remember they hired Dwayne before he was the megastar. That was such a brilliant casting decision. Yeah. They must have been absolutely just jumping for joy when the trajectory of his career just went straight up, and that he was just a bankable movie. Vin Diesel could have left, and they could have just done Fast and Furious with just Dwayne Johnson.
Just Hobbs, yeah.
Yeah, it would have been. I would have saved it. They would have just been able to make money off it. But yeah, it's so silly. Do you think it affects the film? Do you think this it does feel quite hodgepodge because he cut Hobbs scenes because there was this lack of cohesion on the set that they just sort of...
I think the film is just such a mess that you can't really tell anyway where they've maybe cut the scenes. And I think we were talking about this before we started rolling. They're obviously not on screen together until the very end, but I think there's sort of camera trickery and CGI in play. Again, I don't think you see them in the same shot, really. And I guess that works for this story because they're against one another. I do like that we get a lot more of Hobbs this time around compared to Furious 7. And I feel like it's not affected too much because of Statham. You know, the Hobbs and Shaw dynamic really gets to shine here.
Yeah.
And then sort of Dom's got his own plot. And so I feel like this film isn't affected by it necessarily. I think if there's going to be a film that's affected by it, it's probably Fast 9.
I guess we'll have to wait and see then, because that's... Yeah. We've only got 22-ish more days, so we're nearly there.
What do you think about it?
I think Fast 9 will be a very different entity by the sounds of things. I think it'll be for me, it'll be losing something because one of the main reasons I ended up watching it was because of Dwayne Johnson. I love Vin Diesel, but mainly because of we have to remember this all started off as a joke.
Yeah.
This was Vin Diesel with hair, and we weren't massive Vin Diesel fans before. And the main reason I got into Fast and Furious like before was because Johnson had joined, and I like Dwayne Johnson, so I was like, oh yeah, we'll just watch these. So yeah, I'm more inclined to side with Johnson on this one because it's such a diva like behavior that just really I'd forgotten about, but reading about it again, I knew at the time, reading about it again, it's really dropped him down in my estimations, but I believe they've hashed out enough to get on. So hopefully. Fast 10 will be a return to normality and they'll all get over it.
I just think it's weird because if you look at some of the films in Vin's career, you know, he worked with people like Sidney Lumet and Steven Spielberg, and obviously that was earlier in his career, but like, you know, that behavior wouldn't stand on sets like that. You know, and the fact that he made those movies and they are such sort of noteworthy marks in his career, I'm like surprised that it's gotten to the stage where he is like this, considering where he has come from. I think more so than Johnson, whose film career isn't obviously of the same merit, you know, for different reasons. But like, I never would have pegged Diesel to be an unprofessional like that.
Yeah, and it's very telling because one of them, I mean, they both try to give this public persona of being very humble and very after hearing this, you can sort of see through the facade of Vin's. I'm still tempted to believe Johnson's humbleness, at least. Like, I think he is quite a... I think he'd be a kind person to most people he saw. I think, obviously, everyone has their down days. I'd imagine he's got grumpy. Some days he's quite grumpy, but he does seem quite like a humble guy. So, I don't know. But it's just very disappointing. But...
Yeah,
we'll see. And this kind of behavior, I feel, has affected the quality of the movies. I think in the recent career, I don't think he's got that leverage over Marvel at all. That's why, obviously, you can't do fuck all about being Groot, because he's voiceover at the very end. He's the last part of production. Film's locked in at that point. He's just providing the voiceover. We'll talk about that later. But I mean, you look at the reviews for Bloodshot, and you think, I know what the fuck's going on there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Back to more centric Fast 8 talk. Have you got a standout sort of sequence or thing you'd like to talk about before we move on to the overall rating of the movie?
I mean, the prison scene I touched upon, I think, is just brilliant. But you know what? I want to give credit to this, you know, the soap opera drama. Like, it is very soapy and very melodramatic, but I do quite like it in parts. Like, I really do. I think they do milk it. Yeah. Some of the stuff between Letty and Dom, I'm a bit like, okay. But some of the stuff with, like, Dom and the kid, like, it does manage to sort of tug on your heartstrings a little bit. And I feel like that soap, because I've heard Fast Night is commits to that soap opera drama.
Oh boy.
And I think there are aspects of it in Fate of the Furious that really work. But I want to say, because this is not a scene I like. I actually hate this scene. But the zombie cars, I don't know why. I don't know what it is about that sequence. I really dislike it. Mm-hmm. I think that's starting to push it a little bit too much for my liking. And this is a franchise that has had cars jumping between skyscrapers.
Yeah. I mean, the car swarm really does feel very out of place for the world, I guess. Yeah. It just doesn't, I don't know. Charlize Theron's a hacker. Congratulations, she can now hack into cars. And it's just, that's it. I don't know.
Makes no sense.
It's
what
so
about you,
stupid.
Though?
I don't feel this film works for me as well as the other ones. I think rewatching it has almost put it down to quite one of the lowest ones in my rankings, I think. Yeah. Which is disappointing, but the notes F, Gary Gray. He did A Man Apart. So
we have a hatred for.
We just have to
Gary
have
Gray,
the vendetta is out now. That's it. After forcing me to watch A Man Apart, something has clicked inside me.
Yeah.
Rating, what are you going to give this film out of 10? Not out of 10, out of 5. Give it a please, out of 5.
I'm gonna give it 3. You know, I think it's definitely one of the weaker ones. It's not one of my least favourites. There's still fun to be had with it. It's not one of the ones I would go to, but I think when I'm watching it with... I would only ever watch Fate with the franchise. And when I'm watching it with the franchise... Because you've sort of come that far, you know, there's fun to be had with it, with the sort of character camaraderie. Mainly Hobbs and Shaw. Hobbs and Shaw make this film for me. And I think there it's a mess, but there's fun to be had with it. So I would give it 3.
I was thinking to myself, if he gives it a 4, I'll give it a 3. And if he gives it a 3, I'll give it a 2.
Ooh.
So I'm going to give it a 2.
Ooh,
so
fair.
I'm going to give it a 2. It just does not work for me. It is far too messy compared to the rest of them. It's far too... Just very. I mean, the cast dynamics is all off, and you can,
tell slightly. Yeah,
you can tell something's up, and I think there's also a reason that Vin fucked off to be basically away from all of them for most of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, it just, do you know, I mean, it's very, very convenient, I guess.
Yeah. What about your Vin rating then?
My Vin rating, and that's the thing. I mean,
like, sort of separate the drama and. The like for the film. What do you think of Dominic Toretto in this?
Do you know what though? He's doing it for his. He's not brainwashed, is he? He's doing it for his family, which is the most Dominic Toretto thing you can do.
Yeah.
You know, he's protecting his family.
Yeah.
Which makes me. But he's not communicating with his family.
Yeah, I would probably go 4 for
would
that
you?
Reason.
I was thinking 3. Oh boy.
Baby Groot has fallen. Yeah, I would go 4 for the reason that the whole film is driven by his family. And the stuff he's doing for his family. I just think there's... And in that sense, it's very Dominic Toretto. And he's very, you know, he's very brooding and tough in this one. Which is very sort of Vin Diesel-y. But there's that communication, man. He could have just had a quick phone call to Letty and been like, look... This is a situation, help me out of it.
Yeah.
Like, he's doing it for his family, but he's not taking into consideration his family. He fights
there's
his family
like,
pretty easily in this.
There's just, like, 3 people that's guarding the baby.
Yeah.
Like, there's not that many people, considering that before, in, like, Fast 7, Vin Diesel's basically a superhero in all of them. Like, you can't take on... Charlize Theron and like 2 guards, like what the hell? You know what I mean? It's very.
I guess because wasn't there sort of illogical reason for it? You need 2 people to open the vault the baby's locked in.
He'd have
something like that.
Just punch through it. Just punch through it.
Yeah.
Just go. Yeah,
it doesn't make much sense, but
no one cares. yeah, I would go free for Vin.
Yeah.
Fair. Just for the reasons I've just sort of given there. So yeah. So. Moving on to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, directed by James Gunn, 2017.
Yes,
It really is a brilliant movie. Do you want to just explain the plot real quick for some people that haven't seen it?
Yeah, I mean, there's not much of a plot to it. They pick up after the events of the sort of first one. They're established as the Guardians of the Galaxy now. But they're struggling to sort of keep it together as a team. You know, they've got a lot of sort of beef and familial issues to sort of sort out. And then Peter Quill's dad comes into the picture, Ego, and sort of, you know, puts a strain on their dynamic even further. And, well, it turns out he may not be quite as it seems, and they need to sort of put their differences aside and save the galaxy once again.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Great fucking movie, though. Like,
yeah, I love
James
it.
James Gunn at his finest here. Like, it is just one of Marvel's best. One of their, I wouldn't, maybe not their most unique, but it is one of their best character driven movies, in my opinion. Like the teamwork, like every character get this, like ensemble, like every character gets their moment, gets their art.
100%.
There is, I mean, you've got Star-Lord and his daddy issues, some massive daddy issues. The sister stuff between Nebula and Gamora is excellent. Rocket and Yondu's entire like thing together, and just Rocket's like acceptance of who he is and shit like that is just brilliant. I mean, maybe Baby Groot, but he's a baby, he's just there for comic relief. We can leave him be because he's a cute little boy.
And even Drax is sort of gets a bit more to do as well, sort of comedically.
Yeah, Drax
this time.
And Mantis, like the main, like sort of, I don't even know what that is. That not really a romantic relationship, I guess, but it's something. It's really good, and I just love
it's just
so movie.
Much fun.
It's so much fun. It's the colors as well. Like, it's so colorful. It's so beautifully made. Like you were saying, before, like the Ego, the Living Planet stuff. Like the animation to put that together in the final sequence. That's like 1 trillion polygons or some shit like that. Like
which at the time was the biggest visual effect ever created for a film. I don't know if that's still the case. I'm sure not. I'm sure Infinity War or Endgame somehow managed to top it, but you know, crazy sort of effort put into that.
It's definitely, it's simple, but it's great, and it's just really well made. And there isn't much more to say other than that. Like, it is just
I love this film because it's like I think it's a bit more tonally inconsistent compared to the first one. Like, I think the first one sort of is a bit more consistent in balancing the comedy and the sort of emotion. Whereas I think Guardians 2 is funnier, also more emotional, but as a result, sometimes the balance is a little bit off. But like, see the end stuff with Yondu, that it hits, the stuff with Rocket hits me in the face. My favorite scene in this film is actually one that not many people talk about. It's when Drax is sitting with Mantis and he's so calm, and he's talking about his wife, and she touches him, and she can feel his pain, and she just starts, like, weeping. And it just shows, that little scene shows, like, the pain that Drax is going through so beautifully.
Yeah.
And, like, James Gunn just sort of hammers those sort of character moments so well. The scene where, you know, Ego tells Peter that he put the tumor in Meredith's head is also just great. You know, the funeral, the Ravager funeral, just so fantastic.
The Gamora Nebula stuff is really great as well, and that sort of sets up for like Infinity War and all that. I mean, it's very, very well done, I have to say. I really love the fight sequence as well, where they sort of hash out the differences when they discover, then they have to discover Ego's sort of secret as well, and it's just so good. This was quite low down in my rankings before, and I was surprised how low I had it down. But it must have just been because, you know, with Marvel movies, there's so many movies that come out, and you're just sort of like, you just sort of forget how good each one is, and you're just sort of like end up falling down the rankings if you don't rewatch often enough.
Yeah, and go, this is yeah, really they sort good. Of they sort of blend into one after a while. All the Marvel films, I think, when you sort of don't revisit them individually. And then I think when you think of Guardians, you usually think of the first one, but this in many regards just sort of does a lot of the stuff better. I want to take a second to talk about the gold people.
Yeah,
because they're just what Elizabeth Debicki, who I actually only realised when I was watching it again last night, and obviously everyone now knows Elizabeth Debicki from, you know, Tenet and stuff, and, you know, like Widows and things like that. But like, I didn't realize she was in this. I didn't realize she was the main gold chick, which is just it's quite amusing to me.
I want to mention the soundtrack. I think is better than the first one. I think, personally.
Do you? Ooh, yes. That's where I would say I don't know. I would have to disagree with that.
But why?
I think there's some good tracks in it, but I just think the first one's just it's just more iconic.
It's iconic, yes, but I think there's the bangers in two. Like, you've got Brandy, which I listen to on regular, Lakeshore Drive, My Sweet Love.
But then you've got Hooked on a Feeling, Come and Get This Love.
I'm almost sped up a listening to Hooked on a Feeling. Like, it just feels overplayed. Come and Get Your Love is good. I'm Not in Love, 10cc's, is really good in the first one as well. But, I mean, you've got
Come a Little Bit Closer. Cherry Bomb on the first one?
You Come a Little Bit Closer. You've got, yeah, bloody, to be fair, you know, one. I mean, it's there's just some...
The Chain, Fleetwood Mac's The Chain, exactly, is also a banger.
It wins. It wins just on the fact the Chain's in it in general.
You should be all right. Okay, my score, I'm gonna give you a 4 out of 5. I love it. I think there are aspects of it that I feel aren't as streamlined as the first one. I think also you don't feel that runtime at all. And it is so sort of unique. But I feel like it's not quite the sort of perfect Marvel movie. So I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. Much to your disappointment.
I'm going to give it a 5. It's a 4.5 for me. It's a 9. But we don't have points. We just have 1 to 5. And I think I'm going to round up.
I would agree with that. I would agree with the sort of 4.5, but I would probably round down.
Yeah, I'd round up. I think it's like if we're going to go 4.56 at that point, you know what I mean? It's like that, where it's like, it's literally just hitting the cup to round up. But yeah, I'm happy to give it a 5. It is really it's now one of my favourite Marvel movies. And I think a lot of people would agree with me. It's one of the best Marvel movies, I think, just in terms of the shit it touches upon. I don't get the tonal whiplash as much as you do. I do really, I do think it really blends the two tones well. And I like how it has got a little bit more scope and a little bit more almost budget, which is weird to say, but it feels like it almost has more budget and scope than the first one.
Yeah, it feels like it can do more, yeah.
Yeah, which is strange considering they're both massive fucking movies with endless budgets. I feel like Marvel would just pour money into. But yeah,
it's definitely one of the more underrated ones, I think, because you don't see people talking about it as much.
No.
If they talk about Guardians, they're going to talk about the first one. But I think this is superior to, I think it is, but this is the better Guardians film.
100%. We've barely even touched on Baby Groot, which probably should do now, because, I mean, Vin is in it, and he does once again deliver lines, I wouldn't say to the same extent of Groot in terms of actual emotion. Like, we were on an Iron Giant level of performance last time.
Yeah.
And I think there is still elements that are really good, but he's not given these emotional beats. He's not given these dramatic beats that just sort of elevated the character in the last one for us to give it a higher mark. You were saying he was given the sheets that was English, Groot, weren't you?
So he was given like a Groot script, which was every "I am Groot," he says, but translated into what it actually meant. You said that he had that for the first one as well.
I'm not 100%.
It would make sense. I think I love Groot in this. I think he's very funny. He's got some truly standout scenes. Like the opening, but the thing is, I feel like I agree with you. He doesn't have as much to do. He is definitely more the comedic. He's more the cute comedic relief. Whereas in the first one, he felt like a core member of the Guardians. He doesn't in this.
No.
He definitely doesn't. You could get rid of Baby Groot and the film doesn't really change. And there's definitely no moments like the sort of We Are Groot in this. And I feel like Baby Groot's cute and great, but as a character, not as sort of fleshed out as the first one. As a performance, there's a lot more modulation and sort of voice altering because he's a baby, whereas you didn't have that the first time around. So how much of Vin is this? As a Vin performance, I'd give it the same rating I gave the first one, which was a one anyway, because we were sort of rating it in terms of like Vinness and sort of, you know, Vin Diesel, how much he sort of puts into his character.
We give it a two. We give it a two, but I suppose knocking it down one makes sense because
I would give this a one. I feel like it's definitely because we're talking about sort of how much Vin Diesel puts into his characters. That's what this rating is. I definitely don't think Vin is putting loads into Baby Groot in terms of who he is, and so for that reason, yeah, I think a one for Vinness. Sadly, because I know it's gonna really affect the rating of this film.
Yeah, it really has. I'm thinking, but I can't give it the same. I almost regret giving Guardians one a two because it's such a great performance. But I suppose it doesn't meet the stereotypical requirements of a Vin Diesel performance to get what we
of him putting himself into the character. Yeah,
yeah. I would go. Yeah, I'm gonna go one. I'll just have to go one again because I gave it a two as well. So we're at that. And so this has really fucked it. So it's got an 11 out of 20, which puts it quite far down the list, unfortunately. So we'll
but
see.
But I think we're gonna rejig this list.
Yes.
So yeah.
However that happens, I don't know, but we'll see. So we'll move on now to the Vin Diesel rankings. This is a random
bizarre list.
It just doesn't really make sense, but we're here anyway. We've got to do what we've got to do.
We made a mistake with this list. with our ratings.
we should have done a list at the very end, but I suppose it adds an extra 5 minutes to the runtime, so
we've committed to it now.
Yeah, it's stuck where it is. So number one, Fast Five, obviously. Number two, Fury 7. Number three, Strays, Vin Diesel's first ever movie. Watch it. It's on Amazon Prime if you can. The Fast and Furious is at number... Saving Private Ryan's number five. Fast and Furious 1 is at number five. Number six is XXX1. Number seven is Furious 6. Number eight is The Chronicles of Riddick. Number nine is Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Number 10 is Boiler Room. Okay, so we have three movies that have a 12 out of 20, which are Guardians of the Galaxy, Fate of the Furious, and The Last Witch Hunter. Guardians of the Galaxy is at number 11 and Witch Hunter is at number 12. Where would you like to slot that in? Would you like to slot it above Guardians, in the middle between them, or below Witch Hunter?
Below Witch Hunter.
You'd like to put Fate of the Furious below Witch Hunter? You got a reasoning behind
that
one?
Yes, I just really enjoyed The Last Witch Hunter.
I did too. I was just wondering to see what your thought process was behind that, but I honestly don't agree.
I know I normally give eloquent arguments as to why, but I just really enjoyed The Last Witch Hunter and I think we need to show it some love.
Yeah, that's absolutely fair. So 11 is Guardians 1, 12 is The Last Witch Hunter, and 13 is The Fate of the Furious. Now,
do you agree with that though?
I do agree with that, to be honest, because Fate of the Furious is one of my least favourite Fast and Furious movies after rewatching it. So Guardians 2, Fast and Furious 4, and Pacifier all have an 11 out of 20. Currently, 14 is Fast and Furious 4, and 15 is the Pacifier. Would you like to put Guardians 2 in between them, above them, or below?
Oh.
I would immediately out the gate say above Fast and Furious 4.
Yeah,
but that's just me.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I would agree. It's a better film. I mean, it's a better film.
Breaking my heart slightly that Fast and Furious 8. I really wish I'd given bloody Vin Diesel a two now. So we could have stuck Fast 8 above it, but we can't. So it's now Fast and Furious 8 at 13, Guardians 2 at 14, which kills me inside. Number 15 is Fast and Furious 4, 16, Pacifier, 17, Iron Giant, 18, Riddick, which I believe is the third one. 19, Babylon AD, 20, Pitch Black, 21, The Knockaround Guys, 22, Find Me Guilty, 23, A Man Apart, and 24, Triple X 3, The Return of Xander Cage.
This list is scuppered.
This list is fucked, but we're stuck with it now. We can live.
But I don't know if you've been, because I've been keeping, I've got my own wee private list here, which we'll obviously talk about our own personal, in the sort of last episode, we'll talk about our own personal rankings, I think just of sort of everything. And I feel like we'll probably rejig our own list, which will be a good fun sort of last episode to debate which film goes where.
That does it. I've been Cameron. You can find me on Twitter at CamsoOG, ohiofilms.com. I do another podcast called Four Eyes and the Giant, where me and Jordy still talk about nerdy things. You can find that link in the description. There's another channel, Ohi Films channel, which is getting stuff planned uploaded to it. It's just sort of a work in progress sort of shit now. It's taking a lot longer than I thought to sort of plan it all out. And then, that's sort of me. Where can the people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Oasis Oase, probably screaming into the void about Bo Burnham's Inside, because it's just so good. And on The Film Bite, www.thefilmbite.com. Also just probably screaming into the void about Bo Burnham's Inside.
It's just a lot of screaming into the void. I also have been compelled to write about Bo Burnham's Inside, something I never thought I would do, because I don't even log comedy specials on Netflix on Letterboxd, but I decided to log this comedy special on Letterboxd.
It's unreal. Just, it's unreal.
It's so good. Not Vin Diesel related, but if you've not watched Bo Burnham's Inside and want a good cry, go and watch it. So it's fair enough. So that about does it, I guess. You still doing those fast reviews, or have you given up?
We'll see. We'll see. I've not posted one in a while, but I think I have rejigged the release schedule, so we might get back to them. Hopefully, if I can commit
fingers
to this
crossed.
New release schedule, which will be two a week, sort of in the couple weeks leading up to the Fast 9. So gives myself a bit of time to write them.
That's a good idea. You need to give yourself some time. Right, so we will see you next week for Avengers Infinity War and Endgame.
Goodbye.